Hello, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Welcome to Lungcast. The history of indoor environment, and thus the effect of indoor quality on human beings, begins about 1.5 million years ago, when early humans began using campfires for heating and cooking. At some point, the campfire was brought inside caves and huts, affecting the now indoor environment. Throughout history, man understood that polluted air could be harmful to health. The Greeks and Romans were aware of the adverse effects of polluted air in such places as crowded cities and mines, and this was commented upon by Hippocrates as early as the 4th century BC. Throughout the medieval era, bad air was held responsible for the spread of diseases and for the unpleasant sensations that were experienced in poorly ventilated rooms. We know that indoor air is a dominant exposure for humans. More than half the body's intake during a lifetime is air inhaled in the home. Many illnesses related to environmental exposures stem from indoor air exposure. Indoor air was believed to be a major environmental factor for more than 100 years from the start of the hygienic revolution around 1850 until outdoor environmental issues entered the scene and became dominant around 1960. In 1962, Rachel Carson wrote her book, Silent Spring. In this book, she describes the harmful effects of pesticides on the environment. It is widely credited with helping launch the environmental movement. Environment was suddenly synonymous with outside air and industrial environments. Environmental protection received worldwide attention, but indoor air quality in non-industrial indoor environments was not on the list of environmental problems at that time. To this day, main environmental issues are outdoor air quality, energy use, and sustainable buildings. But we're not so much concerned about the indoor air quality as we should. That seems to be changing. There's mounting evidence that exposure to indoor air quality is the cause for excessive morbidity and mortality. In developing regions of the world, indoor, unvented burning of biomass for cooking is the cause for at least 2 million deaths a year, mainly around women and children. And in the developed world, indoor air quality is a main cause of allergies and other hypersensitivity reactions, airway infections, and cancers. Cancer of the lungs is related to indoor radon and environmental tobacco smoke exposure. In public health, each action creates numerous reactions. The COVID-19 pandemic introduced global-scale concern over the risk of respiratory viral infections in a way that no other health event has in modern history. The mitigation efforts during the pandemic, the masks, the social distancing, remote work, and proper concerns over air circulation were all in an effort to try to assure that we were breathing as safely as we could in these days. But among the most impactful secondhand results of the pandemic response is how much time people are spending in confined environments. Over the past couple years, frontline clinicians and allergists have responded to a patient's concerns over recurring out-of-season symptoms of a cold or viral infection. Sometimes what's presenting in these patients is not a viral infection, but a response to their indoor allergens and pollutants, to which they've been significantly exposed because of the time inside. The air we have been breathing may not have changed drastically in these last years. We may just be breathing it at entirely different rates in more confined spaces. Today, we're going to learn more about the risks of poor indoor air quality. Dr. Edward G. Brooks, a professor of microbiology, immunology, and molecular genetics at the University of Texas, San Antonio, and Dr. Charlene McAvoy, a pulmonologist and assistant professor of medicine at the University of Minnesota, joined Lungcast to discuss the manifestations and burdens of poor indoor air quality, the most impacted patient populations, and research into methods to mitigate their effect. Please enjoy the newest dual expert interview episode of Lungcast. To start off, I'd like our experts to respond as to what are some of the important factors that contribute to poor indoor air quality. Can you tell us what the components of poor indoor air quality can include in most American homes?
I mean, in most American homes, it can range from no increase in particulate matter, which can come from cooking and heating. You can have solid fuel in many of our rural areas where people may use wood or coal, et cetera, to heat their homes. It can include pests such as, like mice infestation. It can include, increased particulate matter from living near highways or where there's a lot of trucks going by and diesel fuel. It can be from indoor tobacco use, like some from, if there's anyone who smokes in the home, all those. It's sort of from a variety of sources, like increased humidity in the home where there may be more mold, et cetera. All that can really affect the indoor air quality. And I'm sure Dr. Brooks has a few more that I know I've probably omitted, but.
Yeah, a big category would be indoor cleaning products, personal care products, attached garages where you've got gasolines basically stored in the house and other chemicals that are stored in various locations in the home, like the basement, and if you have basements. The outdoor air is a component, but it's mainly things we put in the furniture that off-gasses, new furniture that off-gasses, volatile organic compounds, and things of that nature.
So it sounds like it's an ever-extending list of things that we bring into the house that can contribute. What are some ways to improve the indoor air quality, considering all these things are contributing to it? I was struck by the catchy phrase mentioned by Dr. Brooks in our pre-call, the solution to pollution is dilution.
Right. If outdoor air, if you live in a rural area, just open the windows and you can reduce the concentration of the indoor environment. In city environments and industrial areas, that's more problematic because you're letting in as many potentially harmful substances as you may be airing out. So it's a bit of a balance. And then things like air filters may be beneficial, and HEPA filters on your air conditioning unit may be beneficial. The best thing you can do is just don't bring it into the house. A lot of cleaning products are really not necessary. And when you're putting on nail polish, do it outdoors, kind of separate those things that might actually cause a adverse indoor environment and keep them outside.
Yeah. And I would add smoking, banning smoking in the home and having proper ventilation over your cooking. If you cook with gas, that's really essential. Some places in the country are switching all to electric rather than from gas for cooking, because that does have a significant effect, and looking at, again, how you heat your home, converting how you heat your home is probably another important way to reduce that particulate matter and other harmful substances that can cause damage or inflammation in the lung.
Yeah, you mentioned heating in lower income areas. We find that people use their gas stove or their stove as their central heating. So you have all the effluent from that, and it's not exhausted properly. And then having water heaters, et cetera, that are gas powered and have to be monitored for carbon monoxide is critical.
And I guess wood burning for heating is another big
thing. Right. I think they estimated, it was back in 2016, that 400,000 deaths in the U.S. could be attributed to household air pollution, primarily from the solid fuel burning that was happening in a lot of our rural areas. So, it can also comes into the urban areas, with our industry and traffic and such, but it's a significant problem.
During our pre-interview discussion, the point about how insidious the effect of these indoor pollutants can be was mentioned. The short-term effects may be especially seen in those with underlying conditions such as asthma or COPD, with flares in those conditions, but the long-term consequences may not be realized for years. We hear a lot about outdoor air pollution, particularly related to ozone and particulate matter and how it affects the lungs, and has even been shown to increase cardiac events during poor air quality days. We know that what is outside can come in inside, as we just discussed. So can one of you please comment on the underlying pathophysiology that is felt to be taking place in our lungs due to these pollutants, as well as the ones you mentioned earlier that contribute to indoor air quality?
Well, you mentioned about heart disease and lung disease, and one of the big determinants of that is the fine particulates. And we find that in homes, the smaller particles, the ultrafine particulates, tend to be actually higher than outdoor air, because a lot of the secondary particles that are formed, again, from the various products used in the house, and their chemical composition varies significantly depending on what kinds of air pollutants that you're putting into your home. And so these agents have a way of the ultrafine particulates. So when we talk about PM2.5, those we think of in depositing in the small airways, and the ultrafine particulates, they'll go straight into the alveoli and into the bloodstream, and may go directly, because the blood return from the lungs goes directly to the heart. So they may have a direct effect on heart. And there's, you know, as you said, there's the short-term effects, and we see that in asthma with high concentrations of certain, like toilet bowl cleaners. There are certain chemical agents that may trigger specifically asthma. And then there's the long-term effects of fine particulates, and there's higher rates of lung cancer in people who are exposed to high levels of fine particulate matter. And multiple studies have shown that.
Now, in a comment, I was kind of divided into like, what can its effects be over like a lifetime? It's going to be, you look at children or even a pregnant woman versus, you know, what we may see in adults. You know, what they've noted, you know, is that it can affect the development of lungs in children. It has to do with an increase in neutrophilic inflammation, increased oxidative stress, change to our microbiome, which may increase your risk of getting like strep pneumonia, some of our common infections. So that particulate matter and that indoor air pollution, you know, can have a huge effect both on, you know, on development of lungs, and then later on, because of the pro-inflammatory, you know, processes, you know, exacerbations of asthma, aggravation of COPD, maybe even development we can see in some areas of COPD and bronchiectasis. And definitely worse increase in respiratory events, like respiratory infections, et cetera. But this indoor air pollution is so pro-inflammatory, and it becomes systemic inflammation, not only to the lungs, but again, like you mentioned, the heart, and then the carcinogens that are in some of this air pollution over time can lead to increase in cancers across upper airway, you know, lower airway, et cetera.
There's also significant brain effects. Some number of studies show developmental effects in pregnant women exposed during certain stages of pregnancy, as well as there's developmental effects in childhood, as well as dementia, stroke, and other cardiovascular events in older individuals. So there's a subtle, hardly noticeable effect on adults exposed to high concentrations of fine particulates over time that may contribute to dementia.
Since we had our pre-call discussion, there was a recent recall of products that had high levels of benzene in some of the aerosol personal products. Either one of you like to comment on
that? That's a good one, to be recalling that. You know, thank God they did. It gets emitted from even a lot of our, you know, like in the new construction, that's, you know, that's a high emitter too. But it's a very good thing that they removed.
Yeah, benzene is known carcinogen, as she said. And a lot of the data has come from outdoor air pollution studies, particularly around petrochemical refining, et cetera, showing higher rates of leukemia, lymphoma, and carcinogenicity. And benzene is unique in the sense that the lifetime exposure seems to be the predictor. So you get a little bit here, a little bit there your whole life. It's not just about cleaning the air. There's higher levels of benzene been shown in homes with attached garages. So there can be formed secondarily through gasoline products, and other volatile organic compounds can form secondary benzene in the home, you know, cleaning, just simple cleaning products.
So aside from the underlying existence of chronic lung conditions, are there individuals who are at risk based on things such as behaviors, smoking, vaping, things of that nature, gender? For example, in developing countries, exposure to particulate matter coming from cooking with fossil fuels, grasses, and animal dung seem to affect women more. Is there an analogy in this country at all?
In some studies, they look at gender, and in some studies, male children seem to be more susceptible to some of the air pollutant effects. A lot of studies don't show a difference in gender. Certainly, allergic disease affects everyone, but we know asthma has a higher rate in young boys, but then in older women, in middle-aged older women, it's a higher rate in women. So it flips. Whether exposure to pollutants has an impact on that is unclear.
And you may have mentioned this already, but are there particular diseases that are attributed to exposure to indoor air quality more noticeably, such as asthma?
The genesis of allergic disease is ethereal. So, you know, we've seen this massive rise, and of course, asthma follows the rise in atopy and allergic disease. So a number of studies have shown elevated levels of high humidity in the home and increased nitrogen dioxide from combustion correlating with higher levels of allergic disease. So that's one piece of information. The other is in the California air quality study, when they were looking at outdoor air, but they show new onset of asthma in older children at an age when they don't typically develop asthma. So this is not exacerbation of existing disease. This is new disease. And so it's correlated with higher exposure to outdoor air pollutants in subpopulations of children. That said, the question of what contribution indoor air quality may contribute to new onset disease is still out there as a pertinent question, as Charlene mentioned. We don't know for sure, but if the levels of pollutants, and specifically those pollutants that have been correlated from outdoor air pollution studies with new onset allergic disease and asthma, ostensibly are higher in the indoor environment these days, you know, with the tight envelopes that houses have, you know, I think we've shifted a little bit in our homes, and we keep them tighter, they're more energy efficient, so these things get trapped more. So my guess is we're going to see a higher contribution of these things, particularly as we switch to electric vehicles. If we clean up the outdoor air quality, then does the indoor become more important?
That kind of feeds into my next question. Are there some standard recommendations you give patients when you feel that their indoor air quality is impacting their health? I mean, as a follow-up to that, I often have patients ask me about air purifiers, HEPA filters, especially those with underlying lung disease. Can you explain a little bit the differences and the pros and cons to these devices?
Yeah, the tricky part with that is the studies on allergy have not been shown to be that beneficial in the sense that they do remove allergens from the air, these air filters. That said, when they look at clinical responses, they don't see a big response. Well, part of the reason is that allergens are relatively heavy and they lay down and they're not in the air. They're on your pillow, in your bed. Now, mold spores do have good hang time, as we say, as well as cat dander. So I haven't seen a specific study on that. But so right now, we're not recommending that just for allergic disease. That said, you know, addressing the indoor air pollutants and the fine particulates in the home, they definitely improve the air quality. Again, the studies showing improved health in sort of those truncated periods where they're studying them so far haven't shown a dramatic effect. But nonetheless, it certainly makes sense to remove toxic air pollutants from your home if other studies have shown a deleterious effect, such as benzene. So charcoal filters are very effective at removing the organic compounds from the home and ostensibly would be beneficial. But again, the studies haven't proved that yet.
You know, some of the important things that I do is I always ask, you know, are there any smokers in the home? And that includes both, you know, tobacco and e-cigarettes, and making sure that they if they smoke, it's outside. It's not around anyone who's at risk. I, you know, talk to them about, like, what do you have, a gas, you know, stove? Do you have good ventilation over it? Is there any, if they don't have a good ventilation, I said, as soon as you turn on that stove top with gas, you know, put that vent on to make sure that, all right, I usually say put it on before and then turn it on. And if they don't have that good ventilation, it would be, you know, is there any way that you could afford Would your landlord switch you to an electric stove? That would be a cleaner way. Some of the data coming from around the world, some of them have randomized controlled trials, some of them didn't really have good controls. But if there's anything that can decrease the particulate matter with HEPA filters, which we do know, what I'm getting at is just trying to decrease that air inflammation that kind of sets you up if you get hit with a virus, if you get hit with your allergens, just to have more of a explosion. If I can reduce that by any air filters, that can be helpful. I always ask where they live, and this is like where all the social determinants of health come in place. Often people live in these really high, either industrial areas or they're right by the interstates where there is, a lot of truck and diesel and traffic in general. And that's where, some indoor trying to prevent the outdoor from coming indoor is really critical. Being able to use their air conditioners to keep in their humidity, stable. Removing plants from the home, especially if there's mold. I mean, all the things we possibly can do to try to improve their air quality in the home.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask one of you to comment on the role of radon as an indoor air quality issue, since it is the second leading cause of lung cancer behind tobacco exposure in this country. Do you discuss this with your patients?
Well, I do. It's recommended that people get, test their homes for it. And then there are some good guidelines and try, to mitigate reducing that exposure, especially if someone, I say, how old is your home? Do you have a dirt in your basement? I mean, because some of the older homes I live on in an older area, and we covered up our dirt on their basement. This is something that is perhaps preventable if we get the word out there and can support people in mitigating it, that risk.
Yeah, a lot of the radon are really become a political issue because it contaminates groundwater. And so short of everybody having their own scrubber, so aerosolization eliminates it, and there's some new technologies with filters and biofilters that may reduce or eliminate the exposure to radon in drinking water. And there's hot spots around the country where people, are highly aware of it, and certain ventilation systems. Again, dilution, just you get it out of the house, but preventing it primarily, like she said, dirt floors and things like that in areas of high radon are probably not a great idea.
You both covered a lot of great information about the importance of being aware of what and maintaining good indoor air quality in our homes is so important. Any additional thoughts or points that you feel we missed in this discussion?
I have a couple of comments about people need to pay close attention to the products they use and how necessary are they. And if you're going to do a big house cleaning with, different products that may smell nice. That's the limonene. It's been associated with secondary particle formation, formaldehyde formation, et cetera. The lemon smell that we get in our cleaners, or the pinene, the pine smell. To air out your house, make sure you keep it cleared out. Use the vents. Use the vents in the bathrooms and in the kitchen. Use the exhaust vents. People often neglect that. And then garages, attached garages, create a lot of problems because you keep all your chemicals out there, your lawnmower, gasoline products. And if you can keep those products in an outbuilding, in a shed outside the house, as much as you can, any toxic agent. And then pesticides, we haven't really talked about pesticides much, but people use a lot of pesticides in their home and have professional pest cleaners, and there's a lot of non-toxic ways, we call universal pest control, that you don't have to use a lot of these toxic chemicals to clean your home.
Dr. McAvoy, any closing comments?
I would just say that, the more people become aware of the importance of, clean indoor air, and whether it affects us no matter where we live, we can always think, I'm fine here. We've got a new home. And actually, I think sometimes these newer homes put people at greater risk sometimes because they're so tight, like Dr. Birx had mentioned. But we're all at risk. I mean, this is something that we're all in together, and how we can even, you know, persuade, you know, our representatives and legislators to put some monies towards helping us mitigate and keep, because it's expensive. You know, this is not something that everyone can afford to do. It's not always something that someone who rents can get their landlords to address so that that person has clean indoor air. I think it's really critical for just our health and well-being, and how do we as a community, and as I know, as a country, how do we work together to assure, you know, health for all? And this is one of those areas that we need to all work together. So,
excellent point. So I want to thank you both for your time and sharing your expertise and perspectives.
Well, thank you for this invitation.
All right.
Thank you both.
Thanks again to Dr. Brooks and Dr. McElroy for their shared experience on air quality, health, and research. An overlooked field, if there ever was one, not only in respiratory medicine, but healthcare as a whole. You can make this listen a double feature by going back and listening to our May 2021 episode on air quality, climate change, and health impacts with Drs. Alan Greenglass and Pune Sambirian. Be sure to check out the rest of our monthly episodes on your favorite podcast platform. For additional news and insights into respiratory health, be sure to visit us at hcplive.com and lung.org. Until next month, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters. So just take it one breath at a time.